right now, Dr. John Minns from the Refugee Action Committee. Yeah, and he's a brilliant man. Keep it strong.
I'd like you to imagine something with me here today. Imagine that here in Canberra, perhaps where I live in Belconnen, there's a centre which contains, amongst others, 350 children. It's a centre surrounded by razor wire. It's a centre where the children are detained against their wills and against the wills of their parents. It's a centre which contains people who have not been charged with anything, let alone convicted of anything. A centre where they're not told when they will be released, if ever. That centre in Belconnen is then visited by the Human Rights Commissioner, Professor Gillian Triggs, who says that nearly all of those 350 children in that centre in Belconnen are sick, that most of them are traumatised, that many of them traumatised to the point where they're committing self-harm, drinking detergent, or most commonly, banging their heads against the wall. Imagine that centre here in Canberra and what the uproar would be. Can you imagine what the press would say? Surely it would demand that a centre like that be closed down, that there be a royal commission into the treatment of those people in that centre. Surely the local member, Andrew Lee, would demand that the centre be closed down. Surely he would call for charges to be laid against those who allowed those conditions to prevail here in our city. But those are the centres. 350 children in Nauru and Christmas Island, and thousands of other people as well there, and Manus Island, and in other detention centres in Australia. And the conditions are worse than that. Worse than I've described. This is the situation that we've come to in the name of so-called border protection. Many of us like to think that here in this country, we have a better, a kinder, a more tolerant, a less harsh culture than the United States, with its guns and its huge prison population. But in the 9 months to the end of June this year, fully 48,000 children crossed the Mexican border into the United States unaccompanied. 48,000. Vastly more than come here to Australia, vastly more than we're likely to see at any time in the future coming to Australia seeking asylum. Most of those 48,000 going into the United States came from Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. But what did this country, the United States, that we like to criticise about so many things, do with them? It keeps them for a very short time to check on their health status. And then it releases them into the community to live with families. Even the United States does not go as far as we do, will not come at that, at putting those children behind razor wire. That's how far we've come. And how did we get here? It's now 22 years, unbelievably, since this country decided to do what it had never done before and to lock up all of those who claim seeking asylum without a visa, tearing up the International Refugee Convention that we'd signed, tearing up the humanitarian principles on which we'd accepted asylum seekers and settled refugees beforehand. That was 1992. And what was it in response to? Was it because there were many, many thousands of people coming? In that year of 1992, there were 214 people who came. Just 214. And they came from Cambodia. It's been 13 years since we heaped on that cruelty of locking those people up indefinitely without charge, the further cruelty of outsourcing our cruelty to poor third world countries, Papua New Guinea and Nauru. The only country in the world to do so, still a unique Australian initiative. And it's been just 1 year, just over 1 year, since we further added to that by saying that all of those people who've arrived since July by boat will never, whatever the justice of their claims for refugee status, whatever persecution they might face back in their home countries, will never call Australia home again. The only country, to my knowledge, that has done such a thing. And there's more in the pipeline. We keep on thinking that the policy can't get worse, that it can't become more cruel, and yet it does. And the latest ridiculous nonsense is that people might be sent who are seeking asylum with us to Cambodia. Cambodia is the 160th richest country in the world, according to the World Bank. In other words, it's one of the poorest. We're the 9th richest country in the world. We're sending asylum seekers from us to them. They have no social services to speak of, no real ability even to look after their own people, let alone asylum seekers. The rule of law is highly suspect. Transparency International rates them very highly on the corruption index, and this is the place that the government intends to send asylum seekers? It's ridiculous, but it's shameful as well. Last year, there were 68 refugees living in Cambodia, and there were nearly 14,000 Cambodians have been accepted as refugees from Cambodia. Cambodia generates refugees. It doesn't resettle them. The government has claimed victory, that it has stopped the boats. But what a dark, dark victory it is, if indeed it is a victory at all. They've stopped the boats, but do they for 1 minute know what has happened to the people who, through their cruelty, they've deterred from getting on those boats? Where are they now? What are they doing? They can't stay in Indonesia indefinitely. They have no right to live there. They can't work there. When they run out of savings, what will they do? Those people who the government claims as the symbol of their victory, of preventing them from coming to this country. Will they go back to the countries that they originally fled, fearing persecution? Does the government know what happens to them then? Will they get on other boats to go to other places? Will they pay to have themselves locked in shipping containers to get taken across another border somewhere? Does the government know? It doesn't, because it doesn't care. They say, this government, that the reason they're implementing these policies is to prevent deaths at sea. That it's harshness, yes, harshness, tough policies, but all in the service of humanitarianism. In truth, it's cruelty masquerading as humanitarianism. I went to a meeting 3 nights ago where the speaker supported the current government's policies of offshore processing precisely on the grounds of saving lives at sea. And he used a metaphor about a woman who's suffering domestic violence, being bashed, perhaps in fear of her life, who crosses the street, flees that house, crosses the street, and knocks on your door. And he said, yes, normally you have an ethical obligation to open the door and give her shelter. But, he said, what if in crossing the street there's a significant chance that she might be run over and killed? That was his analogy. And my answer to that is, if that woman calculated that there's less than a 3% chance of being run over and killed while crossing the street, which is about what happens with people coming by boat to Australia. Terrible, I know, but less than 3%. If she calculates that and decides to take that risk rather than to stay and take the beatings and possibly die, do you still say, sorry, don't come to my door? Of course you don't. Do you say, we'll tell you in advance that even if you successfully cross the street and get here alive without being killed by the traffic, we're going to send you back into that house. Or we're going to lock you up so that there's no chance that you'll ever get safety. That would be how to pursue that analogy. What do? You do the obvious. You go across and help her across the street safely. We're here today for many reasons. Students who know it's unfair to be bearing an even higher cost of the education that's so important for the country as a whole. Unionists and workers for their rights. People who know that the poor can't afford to pay more and more for health services. We're here because we don't like flat earth climate skeptics being put in charge of policy about climate change. We're here because we don't think that people do have a right to be bigots. We're here for all of these reasons, and we know that on all of those and many other questions, there is huge discontent in this country. Wouldn't it be wonderful for the government if they had a diversion? And fear is the great diversion. Fear of the unknown, fear of the outsider, fear of the asylum seeker is the great diversion. They want us to be so afraid of that and so grateful for their border protection that we forget all of those other discontents and support them instead. But friends, brutality towards the outsider, harshness and cruelty towards the outsider eventually comes right back home and gets inflicted on us as well. So today, we in the Refugee Action Committee of Canberra ask you to stand with the asylum seeker, to stand with the outsider for their good, for the good of the country we want us to live in, and indeed for ourselves.